Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today we are going to talk about the new ebook, Ladies on the Loop, and we've got the person who's behind that whole effort, as well as some of the ladies who wrote the chapters. Before we jump in, I do want to take a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Beneteau, Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And with that out of the way, I am thrilled to welcome Susan Costa to our Great Loop Radio podcast today. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for having me on. I am so excited to be here with you.
Well, and thank you for being here, and thank you for your efforts behind Ladies on the Loop, because it has really had a great reception among people. People are talking about it all over our forum, about social media, about what a great resource it is. So as I said, you are kind of the person behind that effort. So tell us a little bit about Ladies on the Loop and how it came to be.
Well, when we were doing the loop, my husband Greg and I, on the Lucky Me, for the last 18 months, we crossed our wake on June 1st. And for the last 18 months, we just met the most amazing people. And often during docktails and potlucks and just general get-togethers, the girls would congregate and chat a little bit together. And it was the most amazing stories, because even though we're traveling together, everybody was from different areas. You might be traveling, I'm from Massachusetts, we might be traveling with someone from Canada, someone from Florida, someone from, you know, somewhere on the river system, and we all just happened to be at the same marina or traveling together for that period of time. And the stories were unbelievable, and I kept thinking, wow, I hope everybody that's doing the loop, and especially the ladies, get to experience all these stories and talk to all these people. And there came a point that I was like, I gotta write this stuff down. And then I thought, I can't write somebody else's story down. I wonder if I could get some ladies to share these stories and maybe put them together in a book.
And share they did. tell us how you went about finding the authors and the subjects that are covered in the book.
So it's really interesting. You have this direction you think something is going to go in, and then it goes in a totally different direction. So I really thought first of all, how I got the authors together was I put something on the AGLCA form, and I was hoping for 12 to 15 women that would step forward. And instead, within about 24 hours, I had 30, eventually probably close to 40 that reached out. And then some, because of the time schedule or they were traveling or whatever, decided they couldn't do it. So we ended up with the 35 authors. And it's funny, because I really expected the book to go more towards the friendships women make and the connections we made with other women. And I thought a bunch of the chapters would kind of be in that direction. But I told the girls that they could write whatever they wanted. The only rule was 3 to 8 pages, but it could be about anything. And all of a sudden, probably about a week after all the girls had committed, I started getting the chapters in. And I was just like amazed. They were about everything. Sickness on the loop, having overcoming fears, cruising in a small boat, cruising with a handicapped child, just amazing. And then somebody did something about the side trips on the loop. A woman did something all about, laundry. And it was just such a fantastic collection of all these different stories. And the neatest part has probably been, I've had dozens of men reach out that have downloaded it and said, wow, this book is just fantastic. I've got so much information out of it.
And we've been hearing that too from both men and women alike, that have been really pleased with the content of the book and with these 30 plus women who have shared, you know, sometimes some intimate details of their fears and their hopes and how their loop went. Was there anything that really kind of surprised you about what the women were willing to share?
Probably not, because on the loop, and I think after the loop even, there's this connection that you feel. I have probably met and am friends with at least maybe about a half of the authors, and then became quite close with many of the others as we were working on emails back and forth and editing of the book. But there's a connection that you make, and you feel that you want to share what you've learned or what you overcame or your issues or whatever. So the fact that some of the chapters are very, very honest and just putting it all out there, that was the type of conversations that you would have sometimes over a cocktails or a potluck. So the fact that they were willing to write it all down and put it out there for anybody to read, I was hoping that would happen, wasn't sure it would, and then thrilled with the results that it did happen.
Well, and Susan, this isn't the first time that you've done an ebook, because you did your very popular one about visiting the Bahamas by boat. So tell us a little bit about that one, because you also contributed a chapter to Ladies on the Loop about the Bahamas.
So that was an interesting, Greg and I, my husband and I, probably spent about a year and a half or so getting ready to do the Great Loop. And I'm not talking every hour, every day, but there'd be something. We were reading through waterway guides. We were reading through online stuff. We joined the AGLCA right away and attended the prep seminars and whatnot. But the Bahamas actually almost was a little bit more of a concern to me than going on the loop, which sounds strange, but I was very nervous about some of the shallow water in the Bahamas. And then when I started to read the materials, the Waterway Guides has a great Bahamas book, but it's 400 and something pages. There wasn't anything condensed. So I had to dig and dig and dig all over the place to get basic information. How much is it going to cost for the electric? How much is my boat used for electric? What's going to happen when there isn't a place to pump? There's no pump out at a marina. And there was just a lot of general stuff that I had questions for, and I really had to hunt for it. So when we finally started the loop and decided to do the Bahamas at the beginning of our trip, I started keeping notes of everything. And I had pages and notebook of notes that I had put together before we left on it. And then all of a sudden, as we're getting ready to finish the trip, I said to Greg one time, you know, we've just learned so much. We are a looper that went to the Bahamas. And we had talked to other loopers that wanted to go, and it was a little bit of a mystery, because I think that one of the biggest fears too is you're going out of the country. It's not island hopping like we have done up in the Massachusetts Rhode Island area. You're actually going out of the country. So I guess we came up with, there was probably a need. So we put the book together, and as of now, which is probably, it came out in April of 2019, I think I was closing in on 9,000 downloads of it. And it's a free book, and we have offered it to, predominantly wrote it for loopers that were thinking of doing this as an add-on. But it's also been yachting groups, especially down yacht clubs and groups and boating groups down in the Florida area, have taken the book and shared it with members. And we've had requests, a lot of Canadians that eventually want to come down to the Florida area and then cut across and stuff. Even requests from people coming up from south, other islands, and are about to enter the Bahamas that have heard about the book. Can I get a copy of the book? So it's had really good response, and we're really excited about that.
Yeah, it's had great response. And for those of you who weren't at some of our more recent events, Susan and Greg presented on the Bahamas at last year's Fall Rendezvous and at early this year at Looperpalooza, which was the last time we actually had a face-to-face event. And their enthusiasm for the topic of the Bahamas is just contagious, as you can tell just from listening to Susan talk. But also the beautiful photos that went along with it. So some of our top speakers, and we certainly appreciate that. Where can people download your Bahamas book?
So they can either reach out to me in an email, SueLuckyMe@gmail.com, and I'd probably still get a couple dozen requests each week, and I just email it back and for free in return. We've never uploaded it to Amazon. So basically, either people reach out on Facebook for Susan Costa, or our Facebook page for our boat, Lucky Me Looping, or they send an email, and we are glad to send them a free copy. The Ladies on the Loop book, we did upload to Amazon Prime. The least expensive you can upload a book is $1.99. Any profits that would come, royalties from that, we'll be donating it. I had talked with the other authors about it. But if somebody wanted the book, we do post it on the forum, and it's all available all over social media for free. But if for some reason somebody can't find the Ladies on the Loop book, that is on Amazon Prime. Just look up Ladies on the Loop, and you'll find it.
So, yes, and you've been distributing it widely. And, again, it's a free book, so that's, very generous of you and authors.
It's 100% free. It's just some people had trouble. They only use a Kindle. And if you take it in a PDF format and put it on your Kindle, it wasn't coming out right. So I did have a few requests saying, can you put it in the Kindle version? And you can't do that unless you go through Amazon Prime. And Greg and I figured it out, and so we did put it on there if somebody needed to. But no, it's you can also just look up Ladies on the Loop on the forum, and the book is attached right there.
Yeah, so you'll find it in the AGLCA forum. You'll find it in the AGLCA's Great Loop group on Facebook, and the group is just facebook.com/thegreatloop. And you'll find it in the files area there. So my question, Susan, of course the Kindle version, you'll know how many downloads there were. Some of the other places, you can't tell. So, you know you're closing in on 9,000 downloads of your Bahamas book. Any idea, any stats you might think of for the Ladies on the Loop book?
Well, it's only been out about 2 weeks now. Can't give you stats. I can tell you that every day, just about, I'm getting 3 and 4 emails with lots of people that have read it are reaching out with either a question or to a follow-up or actually just sending an email to request it. With this book, though, because there is 35 authors, we gave the PDF to everyone, so they're also passing it out. To give you one idea, Debbie from Gypsy's Palace, which is one of the authors in the book, she put it on, I believe, connected it to her blog or something, and she just sent me that she had reached 1,008 in 3 days or that it downloaded it. So while I can't keep track of it, just because of the boating groups that are forwarding it and the response I'm getting, I'm also hearing from the authors that they're being approached by other groups and people that have read it. I think it's probably, in the thousands in just a short period of time.
Yeah, I would absolutely say so, because of just the amount of buzz we're hearing about it as well. This book, I read it cover to cover. I enjoyed every single chapter. It's a great read from so many different perspectives, but there's so many different voices shared from each of the ladies. Again, it's Ladies on the Loop, but many of the topics are applicable to anyone. And Susan, it's really a great gift to the Looper community. And I think so many people are so excited to have access to it. I've seen comments that say, where was this when I looped 3 years ago? So really,
I know, I saw that.
just a heartfelt thank you from all of the loopers out there for your effort, for the effort of all of the ladies who contributed chapters to this. Really well done, and we're so thrilled that it is a resource for loopers.
Thank you, and thank you for having us on the radio. And who knows, maybe we will talk next year and there will be another version that will come out in 2021.
Love to hear that, because there's, loopers all the time, so new authors, new readers. And we are going to spend the other half of this podcast today speaking to one of the authors. We're going to talk with Jody Symes, whose chapter is titled There's No Crying on the Flybridge. Great title for her chapter. And then we've turned this into a two-part podcast. So then next week we'll speak to two more of the authors from Ladies on the Loop. So Susan, again, thanks for joining us. Thanks for sharing the book as well as your time with us today.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
And we will play a message from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be back with our interview with Jody Symes. Back in a moment.
Are you planning your trip around the Great Loop and feeling overwhelmed? Maybe you or your spouse are nervous about the trip due to lack of experience. With help from the voyage planning advisors of Untold Horizon LLC, you can now get underway with confidence. Untold Horizon is a voyage planning service where merchant mariners with decades of experience serve as your personal cruising advisors. Our highly trained mariners prepare custom voyage plans that are designed around your experience, type of boat, and any personal preferences you may have. Put your mind at ease knowing that you have seasoned captains on your side. Join us today at untoldhorizon.com.
My next guest today is one of the authors from the Ladies on the Loop book, and it is Jody Symes. Jody, welcome to Lake Great Loop Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start off, for those who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself and your Great Loop adventure.
So I'm Jody, and my husband is Dan, and we live in Massachusetts. We planned on looping in 2018, but our boat wasn't ready to go in the summertime, which would have been the best time to leave to sort of chase the great temperatures. So we left our home in September of 2018, went south for the winter, and then started our loop in spring of 2019.
And what kind of boat were you aboard?
We have a power catamaran. It's a 43-foot Lagoon power cat.
And so your chapter in Ladies on the Loop is titled, There's No Crying on the Flybridge, which I love. Automatically just got engaged in that right away. And, you know, you share a lot about your history leading up to your Great Loop, which we're going to leave that for readers to check out in the book because we can't fit everything in today.
Sure.
But there's a real interesting history leading up to that. And then you talk very frankly in the chapter about the start of your trip. I don't know if you would describe yourself as reluctant or not, but the beginning of the trip being very stressful and nerve-wracking and kind of lonely for you. So I think that's a fear that a lot of people have before they actually start out on the loop. So particularly this year from COVID, I've heard from a few who kind of said, this isn't at all what we expected. We're not seeing people out here. That makes it extra stressful. We feel like we're out there alone. So talk about how that was for you. What caused that, and what was that time like?
Yeah, sure. Just quickly speaking to the COVID, I think we're so lucky that we looped last year in 2019 and not this year. I feel bad for people who haven't had that full experience. We actually traveled north. We traveled starting in April from Florida and came home. So it was very, very different than the rest of the loop. But getting back to my anxieties, I'm a worrier by nature. I worry about everything. That's just who I am. And I was excited. I wouldn't call myself reluctant. In the beginning, I was reluctant. But by the time we were ready to go, I was excited and really anticipating having a great time. But I did worry. I worried that the boat was going to break down, that we were going to be stranded somewhere, that we were going to get into situations we couldn't handle as boaters. I worried about being away from friends and family for such a long time. And I was just anxious in general about not knowing what to expect on a day-to-day basis, because it's so different to be on the loop than it is in my quote-unquote real life.
Mm-hmm. And then, so you talk about that was difficult, and then you share what I would maybe call an aha moment, that you were heading south. How long into the journey was that, and what sparked that change that allowed you to kind of settle in and relax a little bit?
A few things. So it was probably, honestly, about 6 weeks or so into our journey. So once again, we live in New England. We had to do some really big waters to get to the ICW. We had to do the Atlantic Ocean, Cape Cod Bay, Long Island Sound, Narragansett Bay. I'm probably not doing it in the right order. So by the time we got to the ICW, we'd been boating for about 6 weeks with weather delays. It was fall. It was we were going the wrong way on the loop at that point. So we weren't meeting a lot of loopers, though we were meeting other cruisers here and there. And then one thing that happened, we actually did meet some gold loopers. Sherry and Craig on Cha-Cha were heading south for the winter. We met them, and they started giving us some tips. which was really helpful. The weather started getting better. Dolphins started swimming. And I literally remember saying to my husband one day, I think it's okay for me to have fun. I think I was so superstitious that if I thought for 1 minute, we got this, that something bad would happen. But I just remember thinking, it's okay to relax and have fun. And I was able to start to do so probably about 6 weeks into the trip.
And that's one of the things I just loved about your story, because I could feel that moment with you, you know, to just give yourself permission to relax and enjoy it, and it's okay to have fun. And I think that's such an important thing for lots of us who are, you know, worriers by nature. I think I fit into that category.
Right.
Probably have been accused more than once of being a little bit of a control freak. And of course, boredom is not something
yep.
you can control. So yeah, it's just okay to enjoy it. So the result of you kind of reaching that point is that you came up with what you called a toolbox that
right.
I think can be really helpful for others, which is one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast. So let's dive into the toolbox. What was the first thing
sure.
that you put in that toolbox?
So I think it's about being prepared, which I know other people have talked about in their chapters as well. But we bought our boat in Florida in 2017 and had to get it home. So it was a new-to-us boat. We didn't know the waters there at all. And honestly, we didn't have a ton of boating experience. So we hired a captain, and he helped us off and on for the first part of the trip. He knew I was nervous, and he literally asked me whether I wanted to be a passenger or whether I wanted to be a participant, and kind of just made me keep busy. And that really helped. That was the first tool, is to keep busy and to participate. You know, I learned how to throw lines. I learned how to, he made me call all the bridges on the ICW. Honestly, I think that was really just to keep me busy and keep me less worried.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to help dock, not physically drive the boat to dock, but, you know, with lines and things like that. So that was really the first for me, was just to be prepared so that I knew what to expect from each stop.
And that's a great question that captain asked you, because we do have some members who, you know, realized along the way they wanted to be a passenger. And we have some who say,
right.
you know, I just want to be a first-class passenger and let my husband
yep.
take care of everything. And as long as both people in the couple are on board with that, it works out great for them. But it's great that the captain asked you that question that made you realize, I really want to be an active participant in this. And that led you to practicing and being prepared. So I love that. Tell us about
it. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. It became something fun that my husband Dan and I could do together. It became our trip mm-hmm. because I was participating, it was more of our trip.
Right. Another thing you put in the toolbox was just to kind of look at each day independently, and you called it a ride on the boat, basically, each day. Tell us about that and why that was helpful to you.
You know, I actually remember hearing about that at a rendezvous in the spring of 2018. We went to a rendezvous in Norfolk, and I forget the name of the speakers, two men who talked about the loop, and one of them said that there was a boat ride every day. And I kept telling myself that. It's just this, we're just going on a boat ride. We're just going to be on a river today. We're just going to do 40 miles. We're just going to do whatever it was. It became a lot more manageable, and it you know, sort of chunked it out for me versus this great big 5,000-mile halfway around the country trip that we were embarking upon.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds so huge when you look at, you know, the mileage and the amount of overall time, but if it's just think of it as a series of day trips, that's such good advice for people who maybe are a little bit overwhelmed by the whole prospect of it. You also
right.
came to a way to have a go, no-go decision each day, and that's mentioned
yep.
a few times. In the book, and I think, well, you were one, but I think at least two, maybe three or four ladies actually mentioned that. So tell us, you know, this idea that you had for your go, no-go decision each day.
Yeah, it takes two yeses and one no. And again, that was a tip probably one of the tips my husband wished I didn't remember from a rendezvous. And, you know, just a little aside on that, one thing I didn't actively participate in until probably halfway through was really looking at weather apps and trying to understand how to make those decisions better. So, we'd look at the weather apps together, or Danny would tell me before I started looking at them with him, he'd tell me what to anticipate. And then he'd ask me, do you want to go? If it was a little bit iffy, he'd say, do you want to go? And as I say in my story, I definitely made a couple of calls that were too conservative. And I only remember one day that we both said yes and wished later we had said no. So it worked for us.
And actually, Leslie Poole and Jim Lund, who did the loop, probably a little bit before you, but Leslie wrote a chapter in Ladies on the Loop, and I think she's one of the people who mentions this go, no-go decision. And Jim was actually just on the podcast last week talking about some lessons that he and Leslie learned along the way so that others could learn from their mistakes. And one of them was going out in weather that, you know, perhaps wasn't ideal. And both of them in their heads were thinking, we should turn back. But neither one of them vocalized that. So that's where
right.
they kind of
I
came
remember
to that
reading
same,
that, right.
Yeah. They came to that same go or no-go decision. And I think one of my favorite ways I've heard somebody phrase that, because that is fairly common among loopers, but one person at a rendezvous said, I just simply tell him my half of the boat is not going today. And that just kind of
like
you know, made everybody
That's
laugh.
Great.
But, you know, very true. If one half isn't going, then the other half certainly isn't going. So there's your decision.
And the other part of the deal for us is we had an agreement that if I said no, he wouldn't say all day, we should have gone. No shoulda, woulda, coulda. Once the decision was made, it was made. And
wow.
we tried not to, double think it or overthink
great.
It for the rest of the day.
That's great as an add-on, because of course I've heard the go, no go, but I've never really heard anybody say that. And that's so important. So thank you for that great tip. That's important to abide by as well. And then another
sure.
tool, you said that you paid attention. So talk about that. What did you pay attention to and what did that help you with?
Well, again, because I'm a worrywart in the beginning too much, I paid too much attention to sounds. You know, we have a flybridge, which is in the title of my chapter, but depending on how the wind was blowing, the canvas would sound different, and every little sound freaked me out. But after a while, I learned you really do have to pay attention to sound, because I could sense something different in an engine a little bit before my husband could, because honestly, my hearing is better than his. His hearing is a little off. So you know, there were some times that I could almost feel the boat change before it stalled. And, you know, the red right return or green buoy on the left, red on the right, it changes as you go from different waterways. Mm-hmm. So it took two of us to remember which side, and there were times I'd remind him, it's red right, red on the right, right, Danny? And just little things like that. Smells, I definitely could smell things if something smelled a little hot or a little off. It took two of us to sort of keep, you need all your senses on a boat trip. You can't just get lazy and go for a boat. You know, I think you need all your senses and need to pay attention all day.
And that makes sense. And that's not a tip that I hear frequently. But I think that is one of the bonuses if you are cruising as a couple of having both of you to be paying attention to those things. So that's some more great advice that I think not enough people really think about, is that you're not just paying attention to your navigation per se, but you're also the sights, the sounds,
of
the
course.
Smells on the boat. And that's also important.
So, I remember we met someone in Canada and they weren't loopers, but I remember she told me that she kissed her husband goodbye every morning when he went to the helm, and she just did her thing in the cabin all day. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, I could never do that. It would drive me crazy to not know where we were, what we were. And I feel like I was missing too much if I wasn't up
yeah.
there with him.
I think that goes back to the decision to either be a participant or a passenger. So yeah, that's
right.
Huge.
Right.
So we talked in the beginning about how your start was, you weren't quite on the main loop route because you were leaving from New England, and you know there was some
mm-hmm.
loneliness, some homesickness. But you also put something in your toolkit regarding that, as far as missing kids and your granddaughter and friends. And tell us a little bit about that piece of the toolkit.
Well, I spent a lot of time on the phone with my sister and my best friend. Not every day, but you know there were days. If they still. Their lives were going on. And sometimes that was bittersweet, that I was having a blast. We'd made new friends. We were really enjoying the loop, but life was going on at home without me. So sometimes that kind of made me a little bit sadder to connect. But we did connect. I connected frequently by phone. did FaceTime with my granddaughter. But again, when we left, she was only 2.5. So FaceTime was a bit of a mess. she had the attention span of a flea when we first left. But by the time she understood about the boat and was excited to get on the boat when we finally got home. So we kept in touch via phone calls and texts. And I started my blog, which I know we'll talk about, but I actually did that so my close friends and extended family and friends knew where we were and what we were doing. My husband's family, for example, he's not as great with keeping in touch as I am. He's not a texter. He doesn't make phone calls. So his family really appreciated knowing what was going on as well.
Yeah, and I love that you closed the section on, you know, FaceTiming and keeping in touch. You said home was never really as far away as I thought it would be.
It's with phones and texting and everybody's Facebook pages, you know what's going on. And we did fly home a few times during the loop. We had to come home for appointments, and we were away one Christmas, and I came home last Christmas. Mm-hmm. We came home last Christmas, so. Mm-hmm.
And then the final thing in your toolkit, you started logging details about the trip and eventually turned that into your blog. So mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit. What was that process like that went from just simply logging to an actual blog?
So I really was doing both all the way along, but so every morning when we left, I'd just write down where we left from, what time we left. Another part of my superstition, I never wrote down where we were going, because in my mind, if I wrote it down, I'd jinx us. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want to jinx us. We always had a destination in mind. It was charted out on the GPS, but the next morning I'd log where we left from. So I'd put what time we got there, how many miles it was. I wrote down when we fueled, when we pumped out, those kinds of things. I got a little lazy about those details, to be honest. And anything cool we saw or anything that happened, like there were a couple of times my husband had a few change fuel filters while we were underway, or if it was rough, or we had fog a couple of times. So good and bad things I'd write down. Mm-hmm. It was particularly helpful when we got to Canada. The days sort of all the places were so different to us and so new to us, and the days kind of all went together. So when I blogged, I tried to blog once a week. Having all those little details really helped me sort of put a story together in my blog.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, if it's still out there, where can people find your blog?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Where can listeners find your blog if it's still available?
Oh, yeah, it's dundiggandiaries.blog is my link.
And Dundiggin is my your boat.
Website.
So I always love to hear where boat names came from. So tell us where the name Dundiggin came from.
My husband was in construction before he retired in 2018. He built houses for about 40 years. Mm-hmm. So he came up with that name, actually, because we retired just around the time we bought the boat.
Wonderful. Jody Symes is one of more than 30 ladies who contributed chapters to Ladies on the Loop. And Jody, again, one of the reasons out of the 30 plus, when I was trying to sit down and just pick a few chapters that we could talk about on the podcast, was really this toolkit that we've been through, because I think that's really offers such helpful advice to other ladies and men who may be doing the loop afterwards. And we've kind of heard, as the book became available, we heard from some men too who thought this was just great advice. So thank you for sharing both in the book and on today's podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me, Kim. I appreciate it as well.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us once again. We'll be back next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio. Until then, safe cruising.